Welcome, Money Buddies, to this week's episode of Money Talk. This week, we're talking about mindset, little changes, and a massive impact. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming, and let's get talking. How can you change your mindset? And how can you recognize those little things that need adjusting? What's the impact on viewing money as a tool? That's going to be one of the most fun things we get into today, because I honestly view this as a natural evolution of people as they start to learn about money. They realize money isn't the goal. They realize $100,000 is a tool to be able to help you accomplish your goals and meet your values. Because understanding money as a tool, that can be completely life-changing. It means money doesn't rule you. It means you rule your money. And you decide what your money is going to help you accomplish. It's a great conversation we have lined up for you today. Today's Money Buddy is a fantastic one. She hosts her own podcast, so we really were able to get into it today because we had a great conversation about money. Today's money talking points are going to be a great way for you to start a conversation that is not focused around the numbers. Because that's one of the things we hit on today is talking about the numbers. Well, it's a snooze fest. It can cause people's eyes to glaze over, fall asleep, check out, and leave the conversation. When it's so important to talk about money, when you don't even talk about the numbers, that's what's so cool. You don't have to talk about the numbers to have powerful money talks. It's going to be a great conversation today, so be sure to stick around, subscribe, and consider sharing with a friend and go out and have a money talk after today's episode. And a quick plug here for Financial Planning for Young Adults, my brand new podcast that you can find wherever you listen to podcasts on Spotify, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, wherever you want to check it out. It's called Financial Planning for Young Adults, and if you search it just like that, you're going to be able to find it. So please consider heading over there and checking out my brand new podcast. Quick shout out to those of you listening in Toronto, Canada, and Orlando, Florida. Thank you for listening. And if you're listening from somewhere cool or you want to let me know where you're listening from, I would highly appreciate it. It's so fun to begin to build out this map of where everyone's listening from. So thank you everyone for listening. And let's continue into today's episode with today's money buddy, Sherry Rash. Sherry is a nationally recognized financial advisor, money mindset expert, and the host of Everyone's Talkin' Money. Sherry breaks down complex financial topics into real-life conversations that empower women to own their worth and build lasting wealth. She's been named a 2024 Best Wealth Manager and Advisor Under 40 by Investment News. So I'm excited for today's conversation with Sherry, but real quick, let's talk about today's money talking points. These talking points are things you can take and talk with a friend, family member, coworker about money and get today's money talk started with someone else. The first money talking point is, what kind of role does mindset play with our money? Number two, what's an example of an unhealthy money mindset? And number three, what's an example of a healthy money mindset? We're going to talk about each one of those in today's interview, but with those money talking points in mind, let's get talking and welcome Sherry to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun conversation. I say that every time, and that's true because talking about money is such a fun topic, hence your podcast, hence my podcast. It's just what we love to do. So we're going to have a great conversation today around mindset shifts, thinking about money a little bit differently, and just some of these things that we can change without maybe getting into the dollars and the numbers, because there's a lot more beyond that that goes into all this. And we'll start out with our money talking points like we always do. And I just kind of want to get your feel for, what role does mindset play with our money?
Mindset is everything. Mindset is more important than the numbers, because we attach our emotions and our feelings to the numbers. Often we don't realize how much our emotions affect our money because we don't talk about money. It's not fun for most people. It's fun for us, but it's not fun for most people. So we don't talk about it, or we think it's rude or taboo to talk about money. We can talk about money all day long without sharing numbers. You and I talk about money all the time, and I don't think it's too often that we're sharing how much we make or don't make or have or don't have. So there's a lot to talk about with money that have nothing to do with the numbers.
I was working on a podcast episode and got some feedback from someone that said, don't worry about including any numbers. It's just distracting. And that's an interesting point because, yeah, if you go out and you want to have your first money talk with your group of friends, right? And you go out and you start it with, guys, my net worth is $150,000. What's yours? They're all going to immediately shrink up. Whether theirs is more or less, they're going to be like, that's just an awkward conversation. But if you go into it saying like, hey guys, I'm really worried about how debt plays a role in my life, then a conversation can maybe get flowing. It's all about positioning. And really, like you were saying, the numbers don't matter as much.
Exactly. By just saying, I'm worried about this, or this is my concern, or I have this going on in work, and or I'm afraid I'm going to get laid off, or I didn't get the raise I was expecting. All of that stuff is so much more relatable than this is what my net worth is. Most people don't even know what net worth is or how to calculate it. So right there, like, you're losing a good majority of your audience if you just walked into a conversation and said, here's my net worth. But everyone can relate to eggs are really expensive or milk's really expensive. Everyone can relate to that.
That's such a great positioning and way to frame it. There can be unhealthy ways to come into your money or unhealthy money mindsets. Can we start painting the picture around those? What are some examples that you've seen?
I think the unhealthy is any extreme. That's the unhealthy side of money, because you could talk with someone and, you know, they think they do a great job with money because they're saving, saving, saving. They've accumulated so much. And on paper, it's like, oh yeah, they are doing well, aren't they? Well, are they, or do they feel like they cannot even live their life because they're so focused on saving money? Right? To a miser effect. Like they feel bad for every dollar they spend. Like, that's not a healthy relationship. Then obviously, conversely, someone that spends and doesn't think much about their money, that's not healthy either. So the extreme with anything in life, the extremes are the way where you don't want to be. Right. So even if you don't have a great relationship with money, or you don't feel great about money, or it's not something like you want to have like in the center of your life, or like you're never going to enjoy talking about money, that's okay. Just don't go to the extreme. Just stay away from the extreme of like, I'm sticking my head in the sand and I'm never thinking, talking, worrying about it. Like, that's the not good part to be in.
Yeah. At least be willing to have the conversations. Like, if you are honestly struggling with some area of money, just bring up something around the topic. You don't have to paint your perfect financial situation to someone else and be like, can you critique me and criticize me? Because that's extremely vulnerable and difficult with our money, especially. But one thing you mentioned in there that I want to highlight for everyone, because some people probably heard you say that, like, there's an extreme to saving too much money. And they're like, what do you mean? Aren't we supposed to like live below our means and save money and retire and stuff? What does it really mean to get to the point where you're saving into that like miser mindset?
The miser mindset is you can just never have enough money saved. And every dollar you spend, you feel bad about. And that's an extreme, because that's not a way to live. We have to spend money to function, right? We cannot go a day without spending money. To feel bad about that every time you spend money, like, that's a horrible way to live. That's all. Yeah. That's just a horrible feeling, like to hate or feel bad about yourself every time you're doing something that you have to do. So kind of a way to check yourself is like, all right, am I entering the extreme area? You know, if you find yourself saying, well, once I have X amount saved, that's when I can really live my life. And then once you get to that amount, it's like, well, I'd feel a lot better if I had Y. And then the goalpost keeps moving. That's where you can check yourself and say, hey, this is where I'm entering a little bit of a dangerous territory, because you're never going to have enough. You're entering the hamster wheel. You're never going to have enough. But if you didn't ask that follow-up question to me and I could clarify it more, you would be in the vacuum of your own thoughts. If you're only surrounding yourself with people who think the same way you do, or you're not even talking to other people, you're just keeping your own thoughts in. Not only do you think you're 100% correct, but then the thoughts get like bigger and bigger and bigger and like more to defend what you're saying and thinking. So if you think to yourself, well, I'm doing great, I'm saving. And you know what? No, I do need to save $10,000 more in my bank account in order for me to do this. No, actually, inflation's crazy. This is crazy. I want to buy a house. I really need Y. Now I really need this amount of money. You can see how it just snowballs and snowballs. But if you check yourself and say, do I just keep adding to that number? Does it keep getting bigger? And if you are, that's where we're entering that territory where like we're entering an extreme and we need to be aware. And then how to combat that is, instead of just saving for a number, saying, oh, I'll feel really good when I have $50,000 in my bank account. Like, one, where did that come from? Like, we just pulled $50,000 from the sky. If you say, well, it's 1 year's worth of my expenses, like, okay, that's still a lot. Like, that's still a lot to just have cash sitting there. So like, why did we get to this number? How did we get there? Because there is an emotional factor to it. Okay. And then dig deeper. Why do we feel this way? Well, I don't want to run out of money. Like, okay, well, why do we think we're going to, is your job secure? You clearly have an emergency fund. So why do you think it? And getting to the root of it. Well, like I grew up hearing we can't afford this. Like, mm-hmm. and I never have to say that to my children or be in that position. Okay. Now we're getting somewhere. So that's where you get to, like, we have to dig deeper and deeper and deeper into why you're feeling this way. But you're in that miser space of like, you can never have enough saved. And you're beating yourself up for every purchase that you make.
Yeah, I love the framework you used. If you go three or four whys deep into that question, $50,000 is just some random number that you might have plucked out of the sky. And then you said, oh no, I'm really good at tracking my expenses. That's X amount of expenses for 6 months or a year, whatever it may be. And you'd be like, well, why do you need a year? Most people don't need a year. And you'd be like, well, I have actually been laid off 5 times in the last 10 years. Then you start to get to the root of it. Then you get to that point where you're like, oh, my parents were also laid off a ton. We never had financial security. $50,000 to me would mean financial security. And then if that's a lot to save, it doesn't matter because it gets you to that feeling where I'm comfortable with money. I'm at a point where I feel secure. And then you can begin doing the other things that maybe someone else would have done with the extra 6 months that you saved. So you have to get to the heart of it. Once you get to that point, it doesn't matter whether the number's plucked out of the sky because you're going to realize it's not. You're going to realize that there's some real value around it. And I love that picture you painted right there. I thought that was fantastic. And you were kind of moving into having a healthy mindset with money of saying, well, I have a real purpose and a real emotion and feeling behind why I'm saving money or why I'm spending money to try to strike that balance. What are some examples of healthy money mindsets that our listeners can have?
So some healthy money mindsets is, one, if you lean towards extreme saving, instead of just saving for like creating this pile of money, save for different reasons, save for different goals. If the first thing is a fully funded emergency fund, determine what that looks like for you and save towards it. Once you achieve that, great, check the box and move on. If your next goal is, I want to save for a vacation, I want to save for a home renovation, I want to save for XYZ, great. Create a second account and start saving for that and achieve the goal. Once you achieve the goal, then you move on. And then if you keep doing that, what you're going to see is that you have all these things saved and you're checking all these boxes and you're achieving all these goals, which then gives you the permission to do all of this stuff. So like, because so many times if we just save it all in one pot and we don't attach goals to it, you may say, I can never go on vacation because I need to have so much money saved. Then you go, but if you, and then save for the goals, oh wait, I can go on vacation. I hit that number 3 months ago. I do have enough money saved for my vacation. And it gives you the permission to do it. And just think of the mental shift right there is that I can do it. I saved for it. I achieved it. Now let's go and do it. And it also eliminates the feeling bad about spending money because you have all the money sitting right there for the sole purpose of going on vacation. That's like the saving side of it and how to not feel bad for spending money. And again, it could be any goal you think of. The spending side of it is how do we create a healthy relationship with money? It's not through a budget. I'm not a big fan of budgets. They don't work for 70% of the population. So if your listeners have created a budget and it didn't work for you, don't feel bad. You're of the majority. Instead, values-based spending is huge. And that's coming up more and more often. So does your spending align with what matters to you? There's like two different routes you could go about it. Looking at your spending, looking at 3 months worth of expenses, and assigning a value like self-care, entertainment, travel, creating a couple of categories and seeing if there's a trend. Like, wait, I did not travel as much as I did, but I had a lot of Target runs. But like, can I remember anything I bought at Target? No, mm-hmm. I can't. Well, maybe I need to make the shift. If I don't care as much about the stuff I bought at Target, but I value traveling, let me make a switch and let's switch it and start mm-hmm. dedicating my money to things that I value, the travel over the Target runs. And then see like, hey, how is my spending impacted? Because if you're spending your money on things you don't value, but you're kind of just trying to fill in a hole that's never going to get filled, right? You're throwing, mm-hmm. you're literally throwing your money down the drain because it's never going to fulfill you. So you need to figure out what fulfills you. if like you look at the past 3 months and I feel happy, I'm happy with the amount of money I spend. It's great. Great. Where did it go? Where did your money go? Let's duplicate that. And let's keep doing that because that's telling us that that's what you valued. So that's how you create healthy spending on what is important to you.
Yeah. And getting to that point can honestly be one of the healthiest mindsets because like it or not, you're going to spend money. You probably should want to. Like you can strike that balance between enjoying your spending versus still saving for the future and living the retirement that you want in the end. But one of the things that I caught there that I really liked was this idea of assigning values to how you're spending money. A previous guest on my show talked about his favorite question to ask, what'd you have for lunch yesterday? Most people can't remember. Or what'd you have for lunch last week? Most people can't remember. And if you're doing something with your money that you can't remember, why are you doing it? Like, is it really striking a chord to go buy a bunch of junk from your local department store or whatever that you don't remember when you bought it? The thing that is crucial that helps in our mindset is when you begin to do that, your mind is going to naturally begin recognizing those patterns. You're going to say, oh yeah, I don't need to spend in X area. I would rather spend in Y. And you're going to do that naturally without like the scary word of budget, right? You're not going to have to manually write down every number. You're just going to see it and it's just going to happen because our minds are powerful tools, especially when it comes to money and our values and getting what we want. Our mind's going to make it work for us. Writing down your values next to a balance sheet or a budget or a statement or whatever it may be can be a huge way to begin moving our mindsets. What are some other ways, maybe in terms of savings or other goals, can people begin to change from a bad mindset to a good one?
So the biggest thing to implement is automation. If your mentality is, well, money comes in, it goes out, and whatever's left over is what I save, you're never going to feel in control of your money. What's likely going to happen is that nothing's going to be left over. We're going to spend everything that came in. And when I say spend, I don't mean just going out and blowing it at a store. We have basic expenses and all of that stuff too. So it's not just a shopping thing. But if you instead automate and you pay your future self first, and that is one of your fixed expenses, you are a bill. Mm-hmm. Your future self is a bill, then you're going to pay it and you're going to automate it. So as soon as money comes in, you have to do something for your future self. That is a bill, just like your electric is a bill, your rent or mortgage is a bill, you have to pay that. And just by doing that, you're automatically going to feel in more control because you're like, oh, I am saving. I am paying my future self. This is great. I don't have to think about it. It doesn't hurt as much as I thought it was going to. And then what's left over is what you can spend. And that's so much more empowering because yeah. What I have left over is what I can spend and you feel more in control. And it also eliminates the whole guilt thing and all of that. It just eliminates it because you took care of everything you needed first. I think automation is just so powerful. Like you were saying, like your brain, you're training your brain. If you do more things that are automated or it becomes habit or natural, that eliminates the whole need of, let me sit down and go through my money, like the whole drudgery of it. Mm-hmm. If you're doing the little bits of best practices every single day, it becomes autopilot. You don't even think about it. But then it eliminates need. It's saying like, all right, today I'm going to go run a marathon. It's like, but you've never run. If you run a little bit, the marathon's no big deal after. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how people treat their money. They ignore it and then decide they're going to run the marathon. And of course, you're exhausted by mile 3 because you're not prepared. You're not training for it. Mm-hmm. So dealing with it just a little bit every day makes it so much more palatable. And the big scary monster of the money is no longer there because it's being addressed.
Yeah. And there's a lot to dive into in terms of a relation between a marathon and money right there. There's a lot of like little cross plays that you could make because someone's going to say, oh, I'm now going to invest for retirement. But like a marathon runner who's never trained, you start out too fast, your pace is too fast, and you throw it all in crypto or Bitcoin thinking that's going to be your retirement. And then you crash and burn. And then you never run a marathon again or never try to save for retirement. So it's all about those small steps and training up. You start with an automatic investment of $50, even though that's not going to make a big dent in your retirement picture. Doing that for 6 months at least allows you to say, wow, I can save for retirement. I can do this. I can regularly put money into a retirement account. Let me make it $100. And then it begins to work up. And just like your money will grow exponentially, so will your ability to make that sacrifice and adjust and take those steps. And you mentioned automation. I recently set this up for a coaching client where we have it set up now so that her bills and stuff go into separate checking accounts right out the gate from her paycheck. And I said, listen, the rest of this money, we're not going to get into budgeting line item by line item. Just spend it. I know you have the ability to keep that account above zero. So when we make the money that you can spend a more appropriate amount, then you're fine. Spend that money and enjoy it. It's just completely liberating for people versus sitting in a budgeting app trying to guess 4 weeks in advance how much you're going to spend on eating out. If you just have the money that you feel comfortable with, it's just so much more automatic.
It gives you the power. You're now taking control of your money versus if you save what's left over, you're then constantly thinking, well, can I spend this and how much is going to be left over? Let me check my app. It just creates unnecessary drama. So it's like, yeah, Let's remove the drama of it and like automate, save what you need to save. What's left over is you spend, easy peasy. Like there's no drama to any of it.
Yeah. And I don't know, for me, budgeting works, and it's probably because I'm a weird money nerd, but like you said, for the majority, it doesn't. So find some system that works for you. And if it's not budgeting, then who cares? And don't worry so much about having to fixate on the extremes, like budget everything, no credit cards. There's the extremes out there that's when you get into these dangerous mindsets of telling everyone else they need to budget or telling everyone else they need to do X, Y, or Z. And it can all be so personal. Personal finance is personal.
Exactly. I mean, if you're saving, you know, I call a spending strategy. That's what I try to use instead of budget, right? But it hasn't caught on. Everyone just knows the word budget. I'm trying to make something else catch on. I'd like to start a movement. I try to recruit people to my movement, but it's not working. I call it a spending strategy. So in the spending strategy, when I'm working with my clients, I want to see where your money is going. Let me do some quick calculations. And I call it needs, wants, wishes. So 50, 30, 20. It's I did not invent it. You can Google it. It exists out there. And that's the beautiful thing about finance is that a lot of the stuff, you can find it out there. Where the trick is that you need to take it and apply it to your life. So you just can't say budgeting works for me, budgeting should work for everyone. No, everyone's personality is different. Everyone's ticks are different. So we need to find things that work for you. And that's where most people fail, is that they're trying to take something that worked for someone else and go, well, if it worked for them, it's going to work for me. But I like the 50, 30, 20. So I can at least show my clients, this is like ish where your money should be going. Like in a perfect world, let's save 20%. The goal is to get 20% of your income to increase your net worth. So you mentioned net worth at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Net worth is what you own minus what you owe. So increasing your net worth is more than just saving. It could be paying down debt. Paying down debt could have a more profound impact on your net worth, especially if it's high interest debt. Like if I can get my clients to set aside 20% to grow their net worth, whether it's through saving or paying down debt, great. The needs is 50%. So like if you're in the ballpark of your take-home income covering 50% of your needs, you're in a good spot. If it's 80% of your needs, that's where things are going to be tight, right? Because then if we're still honoring that 20% to go to your net worth, that means there's nothing left for wants, which is the 30%. And that's the stuff that makes life better. Doing is working and paying bills and, you know, having no quality of life. You need to have some quality of life. We need to build that in there. If we don't have quality of life, then it's what I call the caged animal effect. You know, anyone can be restricted for a few weeks. Like we can do, and you can do anything for a few weeks. But then what happened, and I think of my mini golden doodle, when I put him in a cage, he sits in there and he's a good boy. But as soon as I let him out, boom, he has his zoomies and he's running all around my house. That's me. If someone were to put me on a budget and restrict, I'm going to be a good girl for a couple of weeks. But as soon as I bust out of that cage, I'm making up for lost time. All that hard work is for nothing, right? So you need to have a portion of your spending for the stuff that makes life better. Traditional budgeting tells us that we only need to spend money on what we need. If I were to say, well, how much do you spend? Everyone's going to go, my mortgage is this, my car payment's this, my groceries are this, which is usually grossly underestimated. I spend this much on eating out, which again is grossly underestimated. Like all of these things. But it's like, we don't factor in those one-off expenses that happen like once a year. I have four kids. I just had to buy all the school pictures and yearbooks, right? That should not be part of my monthly budget because I only do it once a year. We just think about the stuff that's regular and recurring. Other financial people may be like, well, that's a frivolous expense. Explain that to my 11-year-old that she doesn't need a yearbook when all of her friends are signing it. No, that's a necessary expense. Needs aren't only what we need for human survival. Needs are stuff that we need. So like in my house, I need Netflix. That is not a luxury. We need that for children. We need Netflix. So it's also being honest with yourself. What do you need? I need to get my hair done every 6 weeks. Like, that's a need. If the world came crashing down, I am still doing that thing. So being honest with yourself and building that in. So then that's part of your need. If you really had to restrict, we still have Netflix. We still have our yearbooks. And I'm still getting my hair done. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the part we're missing in the budgeting conversation.
Yeah. And once you build a system around it, then who cares? If you have a way set up that you're going to be able to fulfill those needs, no matter how you define them, then it's completely okay. Whether you're spending money on Netflix and I choose not to, or our listener says, I don't like watching TV, so that's not in their system. That's completely okay.
But buying a book every month may be part of their, you know, that might be their need. But as long as you have that built in, and again, it's within that 50%-ish, you're good. It's not frivolous.
Yeah. And you talked about just kind of walking through, like, identifying your true needs. And sure, like, there are situations, of course, where maybe your money is so tight that you do have to scale back on some of those things that are beyond the boundary. And I think that's okay. It's all about getting yourself to a place where your money is working for you. And that's going to lead us into this fun discussion that I think is evolving more about money being a tool. It's great when everyone can get to the point where money's no longer the end goal. Like, having $30,000 isn't the goal. It's having an income or a system that can support your money as a tool. How do we view money as a tool? What does that mean?
Yeah. So, I mean, money is the way that we get things done. It's, if anything we want to do, we need money to do it. So viewing it as the thing to help us achieve what we want instead of the end goal, like you said. And I think with goal setting, and the financial services industry is evolving. The financial services industry was to blame for a long time for money, the amount being the end goal, because the financial services industry is a primarily male dominated field, right? There are not a lot of women in it. And generally speaking, women and men think about money a lot differently. Women think much more in terms of, what can it do for me? Can money help me achieve these things? So much more goal-based. And men think of it as amounts in an account and performance. But we didn't realize this, right? This is a newer concept, if you will. We didn't realize that we think differently because financial services is male dominated. So they're all talking to each other in their vacuums and they're all saying the same thing. So they all think they're correct in what they're saying and thinking. And then that's the message they put out into the universe. When they talk to their clients, they're saying, you have $350,000 in your account. You did 17% this year. And the male receiving that information is like, okay, cool. The female receiving that information is like, is that good? Is that bad? I don't know. Like, like, what's your point? But now that the financial services industry is moving towards more planning, more goal set approach, now the conversation is, you have $350,000 in your account. In 15 years, you are on track to retire and achieve your goals. Then it's like, oh, okay, cool. Now this number means something to me. And that slight shift in the conversation is so important because that's changing everything. That's 100% of the clients, the end users, are leaving the discussion going, I feel good about this conversation, versus before, only 50% was leaving the conversation going, I feel good about this. So now that we're doing more goal setting and planning, now we are really viewing money as the tool to achieve these things versus the end destination.
Yeah. And it's so powerful once you get to the point where you're like, yeah, money can be used in all these ways to help me achieve my goals. Similar, like, you can hang a picture frame while you can go on that vacation. Like, it's just that you use to meet those objectives. How powerful have you seen it become in your life when you've started to view money as a tool instead of maybe an end goal or numbers and things like that? How does it help you?
It has helped my conversation with clients so much more. In my financial planning practice, I'm doing my annual reviews with my clients. I give them a report and it'll show their performance. I don't even send that to them until after the fact because we're just having a conversation. Financial advisors of the past would say, here, your account did 17% and bang on the chest and I'm so good. And then the client's like, oh, okay, they're so good. They did such a good job. During these annual review meetings I'm having with my clients, I'm not even talking performance numbers mm-hmm. with them. They don't even know it till it shows up in their inbox. Because what I'm saying is I'm very happy with how everything has performed. It is doing exactly what it is supposed to be doing. You want to retire in 5 years? We just got to keep on doing what we're doing and you'll be on track. I feel very confident. I didn't say any numbers. That's a very different conversation than the conversation I could have of your IRA returned 17%, which paces its benchmark. Okay. Like, cool. What does any of that mean?
Like, you can feel how much those conversations just feel a little more boring and a little less exciting.
Exactly. You know, that's how the conversation used to be. Like, this is how it's performing against its benchmark. And I think, frankly, it's more self-serving for the advisor to say, like, look how good I am
pacing the benchmark.
I'm happy. Like, they just want to hear, I'm happy. And I can see it in the Zoom. If I'm going through and I just go, I'm very happy with how things are going. You just see their shoulders relax. You just see everything mm-hmm. like calm down. Because in the end, that's what matters to them. They know, okay, Shari's happy with things. I'm confident in what we're doing. And that's it. That means so much more than, we did 17% this year.
Yeah. And even the other financial person, if you start mentioning like so much percentage, so much gain, like even their eyes may begin to glaze over. But certainly the person who doesn't connect with the numbers, they're gone. They're checked out of a conversation like that. But when you can say, your goal to take your family on a vacation in 4 years, you can do it in 3. Like, they light up. That's completely different motivationally. And just you picture the memories in your mind, you start planning for it. There's just so much more behind that. I recently heard a piece of advice. If you can connect on the relationship and the goals level, they know that you're the professional and the numbers are working. They just trust that because that's your job. Like, If you're a like house builder or whatever came up to you and said, yeah, we're on track. I can picture your beautiful kitchen now. You know that there's not some sort of issue with the plumbing or whatever, right? It's on track. And you don't worry about those behind the scene things that don't matter as much. If you can really connect with your money on that emotional level, let the numbers work in the background, the numbers don't matter in the end. You're going to be just fine. And that's what's really cool about all this. Like, we're getting into a lot of like fun area where money goes beyond the numbers because it's way more than just math. And we're beginning to head towards the end here. I got a couple more questions I want to make sure to ask you. One is, people hear this great conversation we just had about mindset and using your money as a tool. Where can people actually start if they want to work on this area with their mindset and their money?
Knowing where you stand right now, right, when it comes to money. So there's two questions I like to ask, and this is kind of just your gut check of what do I think about money? First is, when I say the word money, what comes to mind? And if it's like bills, it's going to be very clear where what side of the fence you're on. And then the second question is, what was your first money memory?
I love asking
and
that question.
It's a great question, and it doesn't have to be your first one. It's like the first thing that comes to mind. That is your money memory, and that dictates your relationship with money. That tells you where you stand with money. Mm-hmm. We can't change it. We can improve our relationship with money. Awareness is more important, right? I have 4 kids. I go to their schools every year for career fair and I talk about what I do. I was speaking to 8th graders, which it's like, you want to know what it is intimidating, sit in front of a bunch of 13 and 14 year olds and like talk. What are they thinking about me? What are they saying? Are they paying attention? But anyway, I said, what do you think of when you hear the word money? And they're saying like all that, like they're saying like super positive stuff, super positive. And then the teachers in the back are like stress, bills, overwhelm. And it's like, it was like the difference between the two was just amazing. And but what I think one of the differences was, is that these kids take a financial literacy course. They're required to have a financial literacy course. Sometimes they have one every year for one quarter. The stuff that they know about money, like I'm confident, like I didn't have a financial literacy course in, in middle school. High school, they have it as well. My daughter is now in high school. She's taking another financial literacy course. The teachers teaching it didn't have the financial literacy course.
Yeah.
So I think like just the education makes such a difference, right? These kids probably know more than some of their teachers do about money. Mm-hmm. Just the education of it, the knowledge, they have so much more confidence when it comes to money. They're viewing it as, what can this thing do for me? Versus the drudgery of it all.
Yeah, that all sounded fantastic. And what I loved there is that you're building this awareness. If you didn't have a financial literacy course in school, hope isn't lost. Ask yourself the question we've been asking each other. What's your first money memory? That develops a lot of awareness. For me, the one that I always share is when we went to Disneyland for the first time, I had saved my allowances for like 6 months and I spent it all on one big item I really wanted. It was the monorail train set with all the Disney characters, and I played with it for like the rest of my childhood. And that taught me that I love to save money and then spend it on something big. And so I just need to be aware of that, because there's a time and place to spend on things big. But I know that that's generally how I like to handle money, is I'll accumulate and accumulate and then boom, it's all gone. So developing that awareness for me has been huge, because it keeps me from maybe like buying a new computer or a new phone every year or things like that. Developing that awareness piece, I love that we're going to end on that, because I think that's fantastic.
I think awareness is the biggest thing. Knowing what you think about money, it's hard to change it. We're not going to change it overnight. We're going to change your first money memory. But having the awareness around it, that's what dictates your relationship with money and really the rest of your life. So being aware of like, hey, my first money memory was of my parents arguing about money, or that time that I was in the store and my mom said, we can't afford that. She didn't mean we can't afford that. She just meant like, I don't want to buy that for you right now, you know, but the kid hears that we can't afford that. And it's like, well, what else can't we afford? So being aware of it, you can change your behaviors, implement more positive behaviors into money. Awareness is the biggest thing, I say, and that's the best place to start, is to become aware of where you stand with money.
And then once you become aware, everything else, honestly, it becomes easier, because it gets us back to that beginning point of your mind's going to start working in the right way for you. When you recognize that you have a hang up on spending on things that are more in that desires and wants area, you can overcome it. You feel comfortable with spending money. Once you start to realize these things, money becomes a whole lot more fun to work with, to make, to spend, and to save. But Sherry, this has been a really fun conversation around money mindset. We've gone down a lot of deep rabbit holes, and I hope everyone can keep exploring them on their own. But two final questions to wrap us up here. The first one is, how can people connect with you or reach out if they have questions?
Yeah, as far as money-related podcast questions or learning more, my podcast is called Everyone's Talking Money. You can find me anywhere you listen to podcasts. My website, Everyone's Talking Money podcast.com. That's where you can learn more. Sign up for my newsletter. I'm creating an Everyone's Talking Money Club, where we can dive deeper into the topics and create an awesome community when it comes to talking about money. And then my financial planning firm is called GWA Wealth. So you can see me there at gwawealth.com.
Awesome. And the great thing about podcasts is you don't have to memorize all that. Of course, links are in the show notes. That's where you can go to find everything Sherry just mentioned. And the final question here that I ask all of my guests is, what's one thing you wish you would have known when you were just getting started around our conversation today?
I wish I would have known, when I was first getting started, I shouldn't have followed all of the finance bros when I first started working and talking the 17% performance language. I should have dove way deeper into this emotional side first. I always knew something was different. Only woman in the room at any conference, anything I was at, any meeting I was at. And I should have leaned way more into that. I think differently, speak differently about money versus trying to do what they were doing. And because clearly we are onto something with making money fun, and it should be fun. That should have happened a lot earlier for me.
Yeah, that's a fantastic insight to have, because many people still think it's all about the numbers. Financial planning is moving beyond that, which is really exciting to see. Sherry, this has been a great conversation. I know that the audience is going to take a ton away from this one. I know I will. Thank you for coming on. This has been a great chat.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much to Sherry for coming on the podcast. Wasn't that just a fantastic conversation? I hope you each were able to take something great away from that conversation. A couple of conversations I want to wrap up with here is one thought that I had about making retirement like a debt payment. There was a little bit of a comment in there about how retirement can be something maybe we put to the side, or we can tend to focus on debt. And if you get to the extremes in one way or another, that can be detrimental to your money mindset. But I had a thought come to my mind that I wish some company that had an IRA would do this, help you set a target amount, and then do the math backwards to see what your monthly payment would be. Then you can treat retirement like a debt that you owe to yourself. And then that would help harness the power of that mindset that people have around debt. Some people hate debt. So if you're able to view retirement through the lens of a regular monthly payment that you need to make to yourself in order to meet, I think so many more people would be able to easily put themselves in a place where they are more than comfortable in retirement, because then the money is going to grow and compound, and you're going to use that to your advantage because it's probably going to grow and compound more than you estimated while figuring out your monthly payment. But people may put their retirement at risk due to overpaying on debt, and that's where I think this mindset could be so helpful, because that can be one of the extremes that people do, is that they put so much focus on paying off debt that they neglect their retirement. So there could be a potential way. And if you want to work together on figuring this out, if this really stuck out to you, please send me an email. I'd be happy to coach you through figuring out some sort of monthly obligation for your retirement that's going to help you retire. And then it's going to begin to put that debt mindset into work in your favor for your retirement. The other thing that I wanted us to consider as we wrap up here is the emotion behind our money. You have to consider this. You have no financial plan if you don't consider the emotion behind your money, because without thinking about emotion, money, it's just flat out boring. Even my eyes will tend to glaze over if we don't get into things like today's fun conversation about mindset and using money as a tool. If you don't talk about your first money memory or begin to understand the awareness of how you handle money, or ask yourself the question, why is money important to me? Or what does money mean to me? That's going to help you go beyond the numbers and talk about the emotions and the impact and the power that money has to help us accomplish our goals and reach our values. So make sure you're actually considering the emotion, the mindset, and what really goes into making money such a palpable force in our lives. And let's use money to do good things in our life. And when we consider the emotion, that's how you can do it. I hope you're able to begin to have good emotions and connect your money with your values. And I hope you're able to take something good away from today's episode. And I hope you enjoyed it, because that does it for today's episode on Money Talk. We had a great conversation around mindset, using your money as a tool, changing your mindset from one that's maybe bad to one that's a whole lot better, and ultimately the power of awareness. Just becoming aware of this conversation and seeing how money plays a role in your life is going to be the first huge step. So ask yourself, what's my first money memory? You heard me share mine on the podcast episode where I realized that I tend to save money up and then spend it on a big purchase all at once. And that's helped make me aware and made me cautious towards doing that, because it's not always the right thing to do. So what did you take away from today's episode? What was your big takeaway that you're sitting there in your car, walking your dog, or wherever you're listening to this podcast episode? What was your big takeaway? It would mean a lot to me if you could take what you learned today, leave it in a review on Apple Podcasts with 5 stars, or leave a comment on YouTube or Spotify and make sure to leave a rating there as well. But also remember my brand new show, Financial Planning for Young Adults. It's available wherever you're listening to this podcast, and I would greatly appreciate it if you would share that with a young adult in your life that could use a leg up to get started with their financial planning. But thank you for listening to today's episode. The best way to stay up to date and connected to all things Money Talk is to subscribe to this very podcast. Have a question or a comment? Use the links in the show notes to email me or leave a comment on Spotify or YouTube. And if you're looking to get started with budgeting, sign up for a Money Talk today. I'd love to work with you and help you with your budgeting. The link is in the show notes. And if you're a young adult or know one who could benefit from some great financial planning advice, check out Financial Planning for Young Adults right where you're listening to this show. And remember, the best way to learn from today's episode is to go and have a money talk about today's topic with a fellow money buddy. And thank you for listening to this week's episode of Money Talk. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk. This show is provided for informational and entertainment purposes and may not be specific to your unique situation. Please be sure to do additional research before making any financial decisions.